16th of April. Buckle in. That's all I'm saying. Buckle in. I've written a short story about today's adventures. I may have embellished one or two things ever so slightly. Here's my short story. Just make myself comfortable. And have a glass of water. I poured myself a glass of water because I'm a bit dry. I don't know what I've done with it. It's a nine, isn't it? Right, is everybody ready? Right. Untold Truth or Monochrome Oxygen. A story by P. Chubby Thacks. Who am I? What am I? Where am I? Why am I? Well, I'm me, Paul Thacks. I'm chubby, blubby and tubby, all rolled into one giant flabby ball of sweat and panic. I'm naked as I write this. This very morn, my mother had to take my jeans out by 4 inches. I was very pleased about it, and she was very pleased about having the work to do. She hasn't done any upholstery for a long time. And now I know upholstery isn't the word, she's a seamstress. But when you're dealing with the sizes that I reach, it is like upholstering a sofa. Mum's happy for the work because Cecil hasn't gained or lost any weight in over 38 years. He's been the constant 48-inch waist. The slim bugger. I don't know what my waist measures because there's no tape measure big enough to get round my circumference. I'm fat, that's the general message I'm trying to get across in this paragraph. And I think I'm conveying that message very well, don't you? Well, I've been given a super sour eye-popping chewing gum-based confection. Its super sourness is a claim it's not living up to. It's mild. Mild like licking some Dijon mustard. Slightly fiery, but nowhere near the pepperiness of a good British mustard. Or is it English mustard? Dunno. Speaking of mustard, I think that's what this stain is. It's formed the face of Leslie Crowther. Or is it Henry Kelly? Dunno. Come with me now on a journey through imagination and hunger. The morning was grey, overcast, quite dark, actually. Well, it was pitch black, because I got my head under the duvet. Why had I placed my head in such a stuffy place? Such a very trumpy place. Well, I could hear wailing coming from the bottom of my bed, and having watched a 3-hour Most Haunted special last night, where someone's penis got pressed, I was hidden and scared at noises. I thought there was a ghost coming to get me. Panic gripped me. It gripped me by the ankles and began to pull. I screamed as I felt its grip tighten and as I slowly slid away from the covers and down my bed. My life flashed before my eyes. I'd spent it mostly being spoilt. Mostly. I fell onto the floor with a giant thud. The fear was so great. I think I'd pooed weed and was about to be sick. Then I opened my eyes and saw a ghastly figure in front of me. Oh, it was terrible. Its eyes were black pits of anger. Its nose was beak-like, and its mouth was that of an anus. For it was Margaret. In her anger, she'd summoned up the strength of 16 gibbons in heat and wrenched me from my slumber of beddy dream world kingdoms. Apparently she'd been calling me for 40 minutes, and so worked up was she that she just got so angry and dragged me out of bed, and then she kicked me in the elbow and told me to get dressed. And dressed I got. Breakfast, for some reason, was skipped, and that's probably the biggest mistake of my week. My biggest mistake so far being that I've missed both Bargain Hunt and David Dickinson's Real Deal in one day. Tuesday, it was a very black day. Feeling faint and tired, I got into the minibus being driven by a family friend, Len Shankrides. I sat on the back seat like a rebel. Like the rebels at my school who would always sit on the back seat of the coaches on them when we went day trips out. Normally I'd have to sit at the front because Dad would be one of the parents who came along on the trips. Bastard, always getting in the way of my shenanigans. And the people at the back always got up to shenanigans. Apparently once a girl flashed her bottom out the window. Wasn't allowed to turn around and have a look. That's, I think, one of my biggest regrets that I can remember so far. Maybe, I don't know really, I've got lots of regrets. Awful lot. Anyway, but now I was the rebel on the back seat. My pants were denim and my pants were denim and about to become loose. We pulled up to a set of lights controlling the movement of traffic. The reds to stop, the greens to go. Anything in between, don't know. That's how I remember it. You've got to have a system. Anyway, I saw a group of old ladies. They're about 60 to 78 years young, not sure. Haggard they looked, but they, I don't know. Anyway, I thought, right, here we go, let's have a go. And I dropped my pants and I pushed my buttocks up against the rear window and sort of swirled it round. Now, had I had an eye in my anus, I would have been able to see the policeman looking at me. But I didn't, I just heard people shouting. So I pulled up my trousers, looked out the back window, saw there was a brown stain on the window, but also saw the policeman was coming to the door of the miniature bus. And he opened the door and he ran in. His pepper spray was in hand and he shot a jet of mace-based liquid. I'm getting too overexcited. He shot a jet of mace-based pepper liquid into my eyes and mouth. It tasted quite nice. Like salt and pepper crisps that Walkers used to make. They don't make them now anyway. Bastards. Anyway, my eyes. It stung. Almost as bad as the time I, for a dare, mind you, for a dare, poured the seeds from a chili into my eyelids. I was very drunk at the time, and Eugene's current girlfriend said that she'd show me a bra if I did. And she did show me a bra. But the only problem was I couldn't see because I was blinded by the chili flakes. Whatever they were. She wouldn't let me touch them. Anyway, the policeman left without finding me. He did, however, kick me in both shins. And then, I think because I was blinded by the pepper spray, Tony and Mum kicked me as well. It was definitely four sets of kicking. Police brutalitox, that's what that is, isn't it? Anyway, when my vision returned, I could see we were in the countryside, whizzing past historic landmarks, market towns and quaint little villages, all aglow with the lights of a dozen Easter parades. For yes, 'twas the Eastern weekend of Easter. It was a Saturday before the big day, the glorious day, the day of 1,000 eggs. And those eggs are mostly chocolate based. Mostly. But thought of eggs made my tummy all a rumble, and the lack of breakfast intake was beginning to take its toll. I felt a bit weak. My tum-tum constantly percolated like a giant pot of vomit-filled coffee. Just make myself a bit more comfortable. I've slipped down in my seat. Ugh, it's because I'm new. That's my tum-tum there. Sorry. Snacks were needed, and they were needed fast. I prescribed to myself 400 cc's of Fun Factory Cola, for we had no solid food snacks on board. We had no food snacks on board the tiny bus of banned sing-alongs and forbidden fruits. I want to say fruits, but it was snacks. I'm just not allowed to eat on them because I make such a mess. I rub my fingers when they get all like dust off what sits. I rub them all on the sofa. It's not a sofa in a bus, is it? It's a chair. Seat. Upholstery, that's the word I was thinking of. I get orangey stains everywhere. Anyway, I reached into Cecil's knapsack and pulled out the 2-litre bottle of cola beverage and ran back to the back seat like how a golem might run with his precious. I began to open the delicious bottle drink, but then to my shock and horror, the cola began to spray everywhere. Sticky droplets of misery all over my face and my eyes and my torso. The seat got a good covering, as did the floor. Mainly because in my shock I dropped the bottle of liquid and it continued to spray everywhere as it rolled down. Slowly all the way down the central aisle, spraying absolutely everyone with its sticky liquids. It hissed all the way down like an angry child at a pantomime, and then finally reached the front of the bus. where when it was all out of its fizzy fuel, it came to a standstill under the brake pedal of the bus. Len was unable to brake. Panic gripped him, and he started just turning the wheel madly, round and round, screaming, "I'm going to die in the most horrific way possible." He kind of speaks like that. Had I not been screaming, I might have come back with a witty, "Oh, and how's that? Are we going to force to watch every episode of 2 pints of lager and a packet of crisps?" But it was too late, and we crashed. Luckily for us, we'd been coming to a stop anyway. It was only going about 3 miles an hour. We sort of hit the outside of a wheelie bin on an industrial estate. It was slightly dented, but once we reversed the bus away, it popped back to form, so it was fine. Don't know why he shouted at me so much. Nasty. Even though the crash had been very minor, Cecil had wet himself. He claimed it was cola, but there's no way he would have sprayed down his leg like that. And it stank of piss. Old man's piss. It's a powerful piss. The most powerful piss, you know. We were all wet with some liquid or another. Tony had come along because he's just got a new PlayStation 3. That does it, don't it? He wanted to get a new coffee table to display it so very proudly. His wife had come along because she didn't want him making any more extravagant and pointless purchases. They both got a bit wet from the cola, but they were in high spirits because they were back in love. They held hands, and as we walked into the world of leather, she was sort of licking his ear. But she was in front of me, and as I walked behind him, I looked at her bottom. I imagine sort of stacking up items on a buttocks, because you see, she was a big woman, right? But she's just big in her ass, essentially. Big fat ass she's got. It's weird because, right, her head is very, very pretty, almost breathtaking to look at, but then the top half is a little bit chubby, but it's mostly minimal, right? But then her ass and thighs, it's like it's got some kind of elephantitis of the ass. It's like two weather balloons perched atop a tree trunk. And she always wears those really tight, like, jodhpurs, don't know what you call them. And every creative cellulite sort of highlighted. I think what happened was she was really, really fat, but she got liposuction everywhere, but then sort of ran out of her money at her waist, and she's just sort of ballooned. And then you get to her knees and everything below is really skinny again. She's a very odd looking woman. We do try putting things on the shelf on her ass, see if she notices, and very rarely she does. And on her right leg, she's got the words "best foot" tattooed on her shin, because she says it always reminds her to start walking with that leg, because something her grandmother said about putting her best foot forward. Weird. In we walked, the world of pure leather in front of our moist and sticky faces. Michaela, like I say, Tony's wife, was suckling in his ear. I thought, well, I've got lost. I had an air in my eye and I've moved it and I've got lost on my page. Cecil saw a lovely three-piece red leather sofa and he ran to it, giddy as a dog about to get its first walk of Michaelmas. But as usual, Mum just curbed his enthusiasm with a hefty kick up his ass and ordered him to calm down. She wanted black leather. Cecil and his opinions be goddamned. My feelings on the make, model, design and appearance of the sofa were disregarded as soon as I gave them, which is something I've grown accustomed to. So, as I was not allowed any kind of opinion, I walked off. My eyes had been sort of caught by a giant poster on the other side of the showroom. It was a beautiful lady lying on a sofa, wearing an incredibly revealing dressing gown, or so I thought. When I got closer to it, I realised it was a bloke. The pepper spray was still affecting my vision, and I didn't have my glasses on. I could barely see. I was like one of those bats that you see that are blinded. So I thought, hey up, I'm a bit tired, me. So I sat down on a reclining chair with inbuilt massager. I moved the chair into the fully reclined position and started to use the massager, don't know. I felt some kind of movement on my back and buttocks for about 2 seconds. Then they stopped in place, Then there was a strange kind of whirring noise. Then a grinding noise. Then something sort of snapped. Then there was a sort of the sound of motors going really, really fast and a strange clicking noise and feeling. Smoke began to spew out of the bottom of the chair. So I just panicked. I tried to get up, but I was in such a reclined position I just couldn't lift my bulk up. It was like having to do one sit-up, something I've never achieved in all my years on this earth. Luckily, I had remembered a documentary about turtles, so I tried to roll on my side and sort of sway from left to right, and eventually the rocking motion made both me and the chair sort of tip over to my right. Smoke sort of stopped, and I got up, dusted myself off, and sort of walked away as quick as I could. Don't think anyone noticed. I heard over the speaker system there was a fire in aisle 4, but I was nowhere to be seen. I was in aisle 7 by this time, but zoomed off. I tried to find Margaret and Cecil, couldn't find them. Don't know where they were. I mean, I know I couldn't see very well, but I walked around World of Leather for a long time, about half an hour. Eventually, I had to pluck up the courage to speak to the beautiful woman at customer services. Only when I got there, it was a man. Again, my eyes being dicky. He put out an announcement over the speakers for a lost child. I stayed there for about 20 minutes, but Mum and Dad didn't come and claim me. The man put out another call for a lost child. I told him I was about 30, but he didn't really care. Just went back to reading his Dogs and Frogs Monthly. Dogs and Frogs is a magazine about ugly women who keep frogs, so I'm told. I thought I'd best go outside and wait for the minibus, so I walked out, and then, to my horror, I couldn't see the minibus anywhere. It had gone. Then all of a sudden I was gripped with an overwhelming hunger. It was 12 past noon, the hour of my lunch. Well, first lunch. So now, I wasn't going to have lunch, was I? Because, you know, I haven't got any money. I'd skipped both breakfast and lunch. Oh, and I didn't feel good. Not good at all. I fell to the floor and started just weeping. I sat there for about a bad 20 minutes, weeping. Then a smell filled my nostrils. As the smell of beef being grilled. Highly processed beef and cheese. Highly processed homogenised beef and cheese congealing on a grill. And chicken. Chicken left under a heat lamp. Chicken left under a heat lamp getting drier and drier, so much now it was probably almost unfit for canine consumption. And I smelt colder beverages. But that was probably just my t-shirt. Still a little bit sticky from the spraying before. I got up and I wiped my useless bloated eyes and I looked around. I was hoping to see a beautiful McDonald's or a Kentucky Fried Chicken. Couldn't see anything. All I could make out was an interesting kebab house called Susie's Sausage Shack. I rushed over. The need for food was too high of a priority for me to worry about having to talk to a woman called Susan. I walked in. I could see the walls were just pictures of delicious burgers and kebabs. I sat down and flicked through the menu. A boring 20 minutes passed before I realised that Cecil and Margaret weren't there to order for me, so I had to pluck up courage and went to the counter and ordered a sausage sandwich and a big gulp cola beverage. I went back to the table and waited. I looked around a lot of times but couldn't see this elusive Susie. She can't have been working in her own sausage shack that day. Just some fella. Anyway, I waited, and then the waiting continued. I looked around for other customers, but there weren't none. Another hour went when I just sat there. Then I thought, this is no good, I'm going to ask someone. So I asked the man serving, who, if you ask me, should have his visa checked. I can't imagine he was here legally. Brexit. Then I said... He said, sorry, do apologise about that. He said that they weren't serving food today, only coffee. And with that, I thumped the counter. Ow. And shouted, this is a... And then I just sort of got panicked and ran away because he looked a bit like he might get a cleaver and come at me. As I was leaving, I felt a spoon hit the back of my head. I turned around and the man was doing some kind of hex on me. So I did my own kind of ass... gas hex on him, and then I walked out. Hours passed, days passed, months, years, minutes passed, but seemed to anyway. In reality,
stop it.
Sorry. I don't know where hours, days, months, years, or whatever passed, or so they seemed to. In reality, it was probably only about another 15 minutes before I saw a beautiful sign. The minibus was pulling back into the car park. Fearing yet another false vision, I rubbed my eyes akin to how a panhandler might rub his eyes when he's just found a large deposit of gold. I also did the corresponding little jig, and I whooped and cheered, for it was indeed Len's minibus, and inside were Cecil, Margaret, Tony and McKay, Laura, and of course Len doing the driving. I ran over to the bus, but suddenly, my lack of food intake hit me, I felt weak and dizzy, and then everything went dark. When I came to, I could hear Cecil singing, "Grandpa, we love you, Grandpa, we do," to me, while stroking my hair. I felt the movement all around me of a bus. We were obviously going somewhere, but where? Well, that's another story, which I shall have to tell you at a later date. It involves, well, I won't tell you what it involves, because, well, you need to wait, learn some patience. So, I'm off for my tea now, actually, because I can smell waffles. Scrambled eggs, bacon, sausage. There's chicken pie, steak and ale pie, a pork pie, Arctic roll, baked Alaska, beans. Small tea today. Oof. Lots of smells filling my nose there, as well as the continual trumps that I've been doing while writing this, or reading this rather. So goodbye for now, dear podcast listeners. I'll be back with you in about 4 seconds.
Musical interlude. Doodle it doo ba paddle it doo. Skip it doo papa doo lippy. Bottle it papa doo lip. Sassy's got no trousers on.
I'm full up now. Who would have thought that maple syrup and bacon go together? They do though. So to reiterate my lovely tale of war, I was back on the minibus, having recently come to after passing out after a terrible hunger mini coma. I've never gone so long without eating so little. Let's kind of star minds back in time to about 8 seconds ago, do. So there I was, lying on the back of the minibus, Cecil still stroking my greasy, tangled mass of mad hair. He changed his tune from that grandpa song to some up by Vera Lynn. I tried to sit up, but I was just too weak. I tried to talk, and I could. I was strong enough for that. I said, "Cecil, where are we going? I do hunger, sir." I asked him in the style of a southern belle. "Sorry, we do that, lad." "I said, Cecil, where are we going? I do hunger, sir."
"Well, little lady, we're moseying on down to the restaurant to get ourselves some victuals,"
he replied in the style of a cowboy. He'd obviously realised I wanted to play cowboys and southern bells.
"Why, I do declare, that's surely the best news I've heard all day, old timer."
When I said that, I heard Mum shout something to us about stop playing the giddy kipper and get some rest. Cecil bent down and quietly whispered to me,
"She needs to get off her horse and drink her milk."
Then a handbag hit Cecil on the side of the head. Some more time later, we came to a stop at a restaurant. It looked very posh. It was all black glass and just had the name Flora, not Thora, Flora, like the margarine, in lowercase. It looked very pretentious. I thought it must have been some kind of margarine-based sandwich restaurant. I was so hungry now. It takes a lot of food to keep my giant bulk moving. And now it was the early evening. My energy levels were an all-time low. I had to eat. I didn't care what was in that sandwich. Meat paste would do. I needed some fuel. I'm lost. We went into the restaurant and something smelt wrong. It looked very posh. It was sort of all black glass. And, oh no. No, I've read that wrong. I'm recording this 2 weeks later than the previous sentence. Where am I? I've lost my place. I'm panicking now. I'm frightened. We went into the restaurant and something smelt wrong. A strange kind of smell that I'd never smelt before. I couldn't put my finger on it. We were shown to the table, and being so frightfully weak I couldn't hold a menu, so Mum ordered from me. The wait and tension was palpable. Not that it's possible for waiting to be palpable. But countdown was going to be on in 10 minutes, and I can't be bothered with some kind of weak metaphor involving moons, menstrual cycles, and the possibility of being pregnant, because it's to do with waiting. I'm just not good at metaphors. I'm like a chimp trying to trade on the stock exchange. You know, I get the basic principle. I can sort of do rudimentary stock options. But when it comes to bond diversifications and interest deficits, I'm at a loss. Obviously, I realised that was a metaphor, and I could have written one in the time it's taken me to write that metaphor. You know, I could have written a metaphor for waiting, but never mind. So I just sort of sat down, and I waited and I waited, and I waited some more. I didn't know what kind of delicious meat platter Mum had ordered for me. I saw her over the other side of the restaurant. There was a salad bar. This is some kind of place to get vegetable-based drinks, I assume. I don't know. Anyway, we waited for about 30 minutes for our food to come. And then it finally did. I was so hungry. Excitement welled up in me like a frog in a microwave. And I just sort of burst with excitement and went... but then the food was placed in front of us. First I thought, everyone's just gone for a salad option. It was odd. And then I looked down at my platter. And panic and terror hit me like lightning hitting so many golfers in the rain. In front of me was a giant tomato filled to the brim with leaves, some kind of chopped melon bits, and much smaller tomatoes. I looked around and everyone was just looking at me. I asked them what the hell was going on, and they said they were a vegan restaurant. I looked around a bit more and then asked Tony what that meant, and he said,
they don't serve meat or any products derived from animals.
And that's when I began to weep. I was so hungry and weak, I had to eat. I looked down at the abomination in front of me. Its horrific red skin glistening like Satan's old ball bag. I looked at the slightly less offensive leaves. I was going to have to eat, and it was going to have to be these things that I was going to have to try. I just try and imagine that there were a pizza topping or some. Because I think pizzas have got parsley on or some. It took me 15 minutes to pluck the courage to touch a leaf. And it was cold. I raised it to my mouth slowly. I couldn't quite bring myself to open my mouth. I had to get Tony to hold my nose closed. And then once I couldn't hold my breath any longer, I had to open my mouth quickly to breathe. And that's when Mum shoved a whole tiny tomato in my mouth. And then she smacked my jaw shut and the tomato exploded inside my gob. I tried to scream, but Mum was holding my mouth shut. She said I had to chew. The juice was now filling my mouth, sloshing over my dry tongue. The horrific pips or seeds or whatever the hell they were, getting in my teeth. I used the giant force of my man bulk to wrench my head away from Mum's grip, and I got up and spat the horrific pulp all over everyone, mostly Cecil. I mean, I'd been aiming for Mum, but I'm not a very good shot. I ran around screaming and trying to scrape the juice pips from my tongue. A waitress came over, but she was old and concerned. I grabbed her by the shoulders and screamed, "Give God, woman, get me a chop!" Then I passed out. As is my way when I eat such vegetable horror nightmares. I awoke on the back of the minibus. This time Cecil was slapping my face and shouting at me to get up. We were home. I struggled to my feet, every part of me just shaking. I slowly walked to the house, then making my way to the kitchen, I sort of fell to my knees in front of the fridge. Finally, I'd reached somewhere I could eat some delicate palatables, the pastries, the pâtés, the sliced meat produce. I slowly opened the fridge. The warm light hit my face and the chill hit my man bosoms. I blinked, blinded for a few seconds. And then, when my vision cleared, all I could see, the only item in the entire fridge, on the middle shelf, was one giant tomato with the words, "Happy Easter, Chubby Paul. Love everyone or you've been really rude to this year." And with that, I screamed, picked up the tomato of misery and threw it at the wall. I fell backwards and started to cry. Something hit me in the mouth. It was horrific tomato again. I rolled over and spat it out and curled up in the fetal position and wept. Mum then pelted me with tomatoes for the next 2 minutes. Bitch. Sometime later, Cecil came into the kitchen where I still lay. In his hands, he had a pack of 9 Cadbury's cream eggs. He handed them to me and smiled his wry smile and said,
"Here you go, my lad. Here's your Easter present. You don't deserve them after you ate everybody's Easter eggs last Sunday. That's why your mother and Tony have been so mad at you today. Now you eat these delicious wee chocolatey eggs, my boy."
I sat up, wiped a tear from my face and forced a smile and said,
"Gee, thanks, Paps."
He patted my face and started to walk out the room. Just before he got to the door, he turned around and said,
"Oh, Paul, I've kept one of those 9 eggs in that box in the toilet overnight, but I'm not going to tell you which one. Will you take your chance and eat them all?"
I sat there just stunned at such a nasty act from Cecil. I looked down at the 9 eggs. I was awful hungry though. And that's true, except the bit about the cola, it was Apple Tango. Other than that, it's all true. 17th of April. I'm so tired. I was up till 4 a.m. in the morning writing that entry from yesterday, dear diary. I had to get it all out while it was fresh in my brain. I'm going for another lie down now. I thought I saw a ship. Pa-pa-tu-pa-tu-poo. Vocal exercises. Pam-pam-pam. Pam-pam-pam. Pam-pam-pam-pam. Dove. 18th of April. I penned a letter to the makers of my acting magazine, demanding to know where it was. In fact, I'll just copy and paste it here so you can read it in the future. Paul Thacks, 16 Linda Road, Bidderton, Yorkshire, BE1 3DY. Dear Sarah Madden, I've been reading your magazine, Acting Magazine, for as many months as I care to remember. Sorry, I'm very bilious. I always find the articles thought-provoking and stimulating. I particularly enjoy the series Acting Without Acting. While you've never included any of my scripts in the reader script section, I feel very close to your magazine. I have several articles mounted on card so that I can refer to them regularly, particularly the Acting With Eye Contact, and also, and especially, Act Your Way to Intercourse. However, I've just moved house and haven't received my new copy of all the... this or last month's edition. This has upset me greatly. My face has been shaken, much like a Parkinson's. I don't know whether or not to continue my subscription. There are other acting magazines available, which I'm sure don't miss sending their subscribers their special subscribers editions. I know for a fact that Inside the Actor and Lights, Camera, Act always ring their subscribers every month to check they've got the copy, you know, because they've only got 2 subscribers. Maybe I'll do that anyway. I might get rung by Ian Battersby, who runs it. He seems quite like a nice chap. Does Model Railways as well. Anyway, if I do not receive this month's or last month's copy, I'll terminate my subscription. Preferably, I would like some kind of compensatory gift. Preferably, a bust of Barbara Windsor's bust. Oh, my love, Paul Fax. I hope they reply and send me that bust. 19th of April. Nothing of note's happened today, save for Mum has unpacked all the boxes. Now there's just mine and Dad's boxes in the garage to get at. But I can't do anything in my room till I get a proper bed. I went round to Tony's house today just to check my stock option on his internet. And things are looking terrible for Petrel Resources PLC, because it's shot down from 18 at the starting point to 15.55. Also, while I was on the computer, I was fiddling with Tony's hole punch and I accidentally pulled the back off and all the tiny sort of dots of white paper went everywhere. But his wife and him didn't seem to mind. If that had happened with Mum, she would have beaten me and made me hoover. Tony's wife just said it looked like confetti. Then she grabbed a handful of it. There really was a lot of it around. She started throwing it around in the air. And that was fun, fine and dandy. Until Tony got one in his eye. But then the bits of paper went under his eyelid and ran the back of his eye. He had to be rushed to an emergency optician. And he just kept screaming, "In my eyeball!" But being really camp about it. 20th of April.
Royal wedding fever is sweeping the settle.
That's what I was woken up by this morning. Dad bloody loves the royals. I'm buzzing, mate. He's been out and bought bunting, special paper plates with pictures of the royals eating what appears to be some kind of tofu, plastic cups with the word wedding day written on them, and a flag with a picture of Budgie the helicopter, which was written by, what's her name, Fergus or something, dunno. I don't give the flying slightest funk about royal people. They can all go to hell for all I care. Unless that's treasonous and I could go to the Tower of London. In which case, that was just a hilarious joke and I love them and want to lick all the knees. Not in a sexual way, just in an act of honour. Special of the Queen's. 21st of April. We got a huge bundle of post crammed through our letterbox this morn. Amongst it was this month and last month's acting magazine. It was so thin, might as well just be a pamphlet. And there wasn't a single useful article in it. I think I'm going to cancel my subscription. But in the post we also got a letter from France. From a France solicitor. It reads, "Bonjour, monsieur, mon amour Claude." I think speaking French has disagreed with me. Jumping and drinking some more. Fun factory. The letter read this: "Bonjour, monsieur. Mon nom est Claude. J'ai perdu le maintenance en anglais. Je m'étais de nom de Marie Fax Finn. Marie saw a residential house in Bernard's, France. It is clear she is in state of mental decline due to the disease of the family, and I should wish to speak to you with her. I would advise you to make soon as humbly possible. I can organize a meeting with it. If you would like to contact me to arrange satisfied sound, my phone number, which is 3873. Thank you, your friendship, Claude." Translated from French to English via Yahoo Babelfish. Remember that.
"Oh,"
said Cecil when he read it.
"Oh, indeed.
When we get the phone call, Cecil will be ringing them up henceforth. I mean, when we get the phone connected, Cecil will be ringing them up henceforth, and also forthwith. Or is it forthwith? Don't know. Don't do speaking much. Right. 22nd of April. Just got a phone call from an excited Tony. He says my stock options shot up to 17.6. Not as quite as high as the 18, but, you know, things are looking up for my retirement fund. Dad's just been moaning about how badly we've been treated by TalkTalk in terms of how long it's taken for them, you know, getting our phones set up and everything. Mum says that it takes as long as it takes. And then she made him start unpacking boxes from the garage. He's been well grumpy all day.